It's time for our weekly catch-up with ACT Party Deputy Leader Brooke Van Velden.
This morning I spoke to Deputy Leader of the ACT Party, Brooke Van Velden, about ACT's solution to managing COVID-19 and the housing crisis. She started by talking about where the government's approach to the pandemic has gone wrong.
The biggest problem that was found with COVID is that there aren't any real structured rules that kind of set clear expectations around New Zealand. So, you know, we've got the government saying, you know, we're the only people that can do managed isolation and quarantine facilities, and yet they can't get their own facilities to kind of keep people safe while they're in isolation. You know, last week we had this COVID scare, and it appeared that people from the managed isolation facility had actually been mixing and mingling with people from a resident facility next door. And you've got to ask the question, how is that allowed to happen if these are the guys that are supposed to be managing isolation facilities and they're not letting other people into that competitive market? And we're not allowing people back into New Zealand because of this reason. I think there are other institutions in New Zealand that would be able and willing to bring people in back through the border if they could and actually create a private facility and do the job probably even better than the government. Now, there are the huge shortages of workers and family members not being able to come back because we expect that the government is doing a good job in managing these facilities, but they're not.
Is there a concern maybe if this were to be privatised, however, that, you know, if there's an economic incentive behind it, people would kind of cut corners on those more regulatory aspects, which are so important with something like COVID?
No, I don't think so at all. So what we've seen with some of the education facilities is that they actively want to bring back people, and they actually know how to do that. You know, boarding hostels manage people all the time, and they keep kids safe. So I think there are abilities to do that. We have so many other hotels that are being underutilized in New Zealand currently because they're not the ones being picked by the government. So we have more room. We're just not actually using the spaces. And if we look to what Taiwan was doing, you know, they've managed to have no lockdowns at all, but they have also used private isolation facilities. So it has worked in other countries. We're just not allowing it to happen here.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk a bit about Taiwan's approach. In terms of compulsory mask wearing and contact tracing, would that be something that ACT would copy in the footsteps of Taiwan?
Yeah, it's certainly a better model than the one that we've got here. So I understand the kind of dilemma there of mask wearing, but I would say, look, on the whole, if you're faced with two potential outcomes, which is to wear masks when you're in areas where it's very high risk and that you could contract COVID, like going on aeroplanes and taxis and Ubers, or having community outbreaks and having to go through lockdowns, which cost even just Auckland $400 million every week, I think I know which alternative I'd prefer. And certainly, if you look at that economic impact, you know, Taiwan has done so much better than us because they've had mask wearing, but they haven't had any of those lockdowns. So faced with those two alternatives, I'd certainly go for mask wearing.
Yeah, because it's tricky. I mean, we haven't had in the same kind of scale as they have in America protests around mask wearing, but there definitely are some people who have, you know, spoken out against it. And how do you sort of get those people on side?
Firstly, you've got to lead by example. So if you are someone who is in the community, do actually wear a mask because people will pick up on that. But also there's another element to it, of course, which is the tracing. And, you know, the government said, you know, let's do this COVID tracing app. And the uptake on it has been ridiculously low, let's be fair. It's been dropping off significantly. So people do need to remain vigilant. But we need to be looking at technology that's better than just what the government has done. Taiwan has had a smarter system where it collects data that's not actually used on an individual basis, but it allows people to be traced in a way that if someone becomes an active case in the community, it has a log of all of the different places that your phone came into contact with that person. I think that's a far smarter equivalent, and unfortunately we've kind of gone with a government-led approach that hasn't worked in the same way that Taiwan's has. And so hopefully that's an area that we become smarter at.
With that kind of tracking approach, though, I mean, then you do also run into the concerns of people who are, you know, worried about their privacy and particularly government surveillance. to me, I wouldn't have expected that coming from ACT. And I don't know if that's just because I see it as like a very much like, you know, government hands-off kind of party. And this to me seems very 1989 sort of government hands-on. I don't know.
Well, we've just got to get smarter. Look, we're living in a very, very different world to the one that we were a year ago. And I just look at, we can't keep going through lockdowns. It's unsustainable. And I've met so many people over the campaign who are actively struggling with their businesses and saying, we just can't go through another lockdown. So we have to find an alternative. And unfortunately, that's the only other one that we've got. We can't just keep comparing ourselves to places in Australia that have got worse than us. We need to be actively looking at what are the countries that are doing better than us actually doing in their country.
Well, thank you, Brooke. We might move on to our second topic now, which is to do with the housing crisis. Now, I understand that ACT believes that Labor has misdiagnosed what is the cause of the housing crisis. What, in ACT's view, is contributing to that?
So we've had so many from the Labor Party over the last few years about what is the cause of this huge housing crisis and house price increases. And, you know, we had, for example, Chinese-sounding names was an excuse at one point, and so they put in place a foreign home buyer ban. And what happened? The house prices still increased. Then we had people advocating for a CGT, a capital gains tax, but then the tax working group actually said, but we've looked at that as a solution too, and that won't do anything for house prices. And then people said, oh, well, it's all the immigrants coming in. But now we've been in a period where our borders are practically shut and house prices have been rising even more. So we've just got to stop looking at all these excuses and start looking at what are we actually not doing? We're not building enough homes. And that's because the incentives for the councils is wrong. So if you look back to the early 2000s, there was something called the leaky building crisis in Auckland. And that was kind of the shift away from councils actually wanting to build anything because they were incredibly liable. And they had to fork out millions of dollars for what was essentially a buildings problem in their local council. So you can imagine that they're incredibly risk averse to actually put in place new homes in the area. But they've also got to fork out money for infrastructure. So ACT says, okay, well, if we do want to reform the RMA and get more homes built, we need to be making sure that the councils are also on board. So we would put in place 30-year compulsory building insurance for any new build so that the council themselves don't feel risk averse, that they're the ones having to pick up the blame if something goes wrong. I would also put in place 30-year infrastructure partnerships so that the central government and the local government are working together on what new infrastructure will help those new builds. If you take the GST on that build, if you give half of that money to the council that issued the consent, then you'd actually have money there sitting aside for the pipes and the sewage and all of the roadworks to kind of help that new build happen. And I think that's a way of getting more people into affordable homes rather than councils sitting back and being risk averse about the problems that could go wrong. We need people to actively be building, not worrying about what happens if we do build.
Recently, it was announced that Auckland Council has granted over $1 billion of resource consents in the past month, which I think is the highest amount in the RMA's history. So what does that kind of tell us then?
Yeah, well, what happened was there was a change to the building law just recently, and so we have seen more councils issuing consents. The problem is we just have such a huge backlog. I mean, we haven't been issuing consents at this rate for about 40 years, so we have a huge undersupply of homes, so we do need to just keep building.
Now, I just wanted to finish up quickly by talking about repealing the RMA, because I know that that is ACT's big thing in terms of having an Urban Development Act and then a separate Environmental Protection Act. I guess my question was that the RMA, when it was introduced, was a world-renowned piece of environmental legislation. So how do we still ensure that it serves that purpose when it's in this, you know, separate Environmental Protection Act? How do we ensure that that doesn't kind of get pushed to the bottom in the name of the Urban Development Act?
Yeah, so what happened with the RMA is it took a whole bunch of building laws that we already had and kind of bundled them all into one. And I think what we have to be really careful of in New Zealand is not just saying, look, this is a law that was really, really good at the time and that should be protected. We should always be reviewing our laws and seeing what's out of date and what should be updated, because that's just good governance. And so what we've said is, look, we have a lot of environmental standards that have been brought in under things like the ETS and other agreements. Do we need to double up those into what is essentially the RMA and the Building Act as well? Probably not. We could allow those to happen under different laws, but let's just simplify the real basics of building laws and make sure that we're talking about building and allowing people to be free to build rather than being constrained by regulations. So we're allowing for a rethink about what's a good, fresh building approach for the current environment that we live in, not one that was 40 years ago.
Just lastly, you're talking about people not being restrained by regulations. If you are loosening regulations on building, how do you ensure that, you know, the houses being built aren't just shoddily done and will only last for 20, 30, 50 years rather than the houses we have that were built hundreds of years ago are still standing?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the way of looking at this is if you have this building insurance scheme, you're asking for people who are regulated by the Reserve Bank as insurers to kind of back your project. And if they look individually at the types of resource materials, the building materials that you've been using, and they're not up to scratch and comfortable that they would themselves insure, then you know it's not going to be a good new build and it's not going to be up to scratch and code. On the other hand, should we be making the regulations so restrictive that every single material has to be signed off by the council? I don't think so. I think that is what holds up new developments and affordable housing. If we allow it to be going to the building insurance to have that compliance, I think that will simplify the model, but also give you that certainty that if someone is actually going to back your project, then they have an incentive to make sure that you're doing it right.
That was Deputy Leader Brooke Van Velden from the ACT Party.